It's time for the Graham Capital Market Update, a daily look at Wall Street brought to you by Graham Capital, an estate planning and investment management firm right here in Florida. How hard is your money working for you? Let's find out with your hosts, David Graham and Stosh Graham.
This is Dave Graham, the retirement guy, and you're listening to the Market Update brought to you by Graham Capital Advisors. Every day you'll hear us at 6 o'clock on 1250 WHNZ. We'll give you a market update by Stosh Graham, our Chief Investment Officer, Managing Director of Graham Capital in Washington, D.C. will come on and tell us what we need to hear, what happens in the markets today. Anyway, show is brought to you by Graham Capital Advisors. We're the people that you come to when you're getting ready for retirement and you want to do it properly, you want to do it correctly, you want to take the stress out of it. Let us help you. Let us show you how easy it is. When you walk out of our offices, this giant retirement monkey will be taken off your back. Let us help you. Most people spend more time planning a summer vacation than they do the last 20, 30 years of their life. But that's what we do. You know, we have everything you're going to need here, legal planning and investing. We have offices in Tampa, Florida, on Kennedy Boulevard, right across from the West Shore Mall, on Ringling Boulevard in Washington and Sarasota, and then down in Venice. If you could hear my voice, we could help you plan for retirement correctly. But let us help you. Go to our website, schedule an appointment. It's GrahamCapitalAdvisors.com. That's GrahamCapitalAdvisors.com. Let's start off with a little levity here. You know, there are quotes from Johnny Carson, of all things. And I'll give you his quote, and then I'll see how it applies to retirement planning. Let's have some fun here. Here's a quote by Johnny. I know a man who gave up smoking, drinking, sex, and rich food. He was healthy right up to the day he killed himself. Okay. Some people, you know, their haste to retire, they start looking at all of the expenses they could cut out of their life if they set their mind to it. But what's the point of being retired if you can't have any fun anymore? Come on. The whole goal is not have any stress, knowing you can live on a check that you have coming in, and enjoy life, whatever it is. I don't care if it's fishing, playing golf, going to art studios, going to the beach, whatever floats your boat, but you should be enjoying it. That's what retirement's all about. Here's another one by Johnny. People will pay more to be entertained than educated. All right? Look, Johnny recognized this fact many years ago, and it's still true today, unfortunately. News media also recognizes this fact, which is one of the problems in society. When the news is more about entertainment than information, it can lead to people having too much anxiety about what's going on around them, you know, because of the way things are presented. And that often leads to less than ideal financial or investment decisions. People do things on the cuff. They don't think about it. They just do it because they heard it from their barber. They heard it from somebody that they're going out with or whatever. The bottom line is, be smart about it, will you please? Here's one more quote. I work because I enjoy what I'm doing, and the fact that I make money at it is fine and dandy. That's a nice side effect. Well, there are a lot of people that are in great shape financially and could retire whenever they want to, but they continue to work because they like it, or at least they like it better than the idea of not working. And it's fine to keep working if you want to, but you should at least have a plan in place to keep your health going so that will continue to allow you to continue working and do what you want to do. You got to stay healthy in the process. But psychologically, you know you're doing something you really love to do. And, you know, quite frankly, right here at Graham Capital, I've been doing this for over 40 years because I love doing it. It's not like I can't retire. I simply enjoy helping people plan for retirement properly. And we're very proud of the fact that we're true fiduciaries. So come and see us. It's GrahamCapitalAdvisors.com. I'll give you one more from Johnny. I never analyze. I just go out and do it. All right. It's good to be informed and spend some time thinking through financial decisions, but some people spend so much time analyzing that they never get around to making a decision at all, and that in itself could be catastrophic to their financial situation. Instead of biting the bullet and making the investment, they wait and wait, and then the market crashes, and they still wait instead of investing when the market just crashed, So the whole goal is don't try to do it yourself. You know, God gives us the capacity, all be good at some things. So take what you have and do it. But when it comes to investing, planning, retirement, what have you, go to a professional, go to a true fiduciary, and let them help you. And that's what we are at Graham Capital. Go to our website, schedule an appointment. It's GrahamCapitalAdvisors.com. And online we have Stosh Graham. He's our Chief Investment Officer, Managing Director of Graham Capital Wealth Management, Washington, D.C. That's GrahamCapitalWealth.com. Stosh, how you doing, guy?
Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon. Look, the markets were weak today, so what's the driving forces behind them today?
Yeah, I would say it's twofold, but certainly you saw markets come under pressure with less than, I would say, ideal news coming out of China. You saw Apple. And look, I think when you think of the dominant companies of the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, or just really the American indices for the last few years, I think Apple is certainly one of the companies that comes to mind. So when we got news that Apple saw below average sales coming out of China in the double digits, it certainly created a degree of worry. Obviously, there is another situation with Apple in regards to Counterpoint, where they're losing market share to a host of different companies, again, within China. And again, Apple has made a strategic investment in China the last few years. So it is something we're keeping a close eye on. But again, the markets really were playing defense from the opening bell. And a lot of that was directly tied to Apple's negative development in regards to their sales within China.
Well, I mean, when you look at the investments that the tech industry has in China, of course, you have Apple with all their iPhones. Then you had advanced micro devices. You know, they're trying to sell their artificial intelligence chip. And now Tesla, you know, that it also has had its route expanded. You know, technology stocks were at their highest in the last 3 years. And, you know, the old cliche, what goes up comes down. So obviously we're raising the risk of a pullback. And, you know, and you look at the NASDAQ 100 futures are extremely extended. You know, trees don't grow to the sky. And I guess the issue is now with doing what you're doing as a money manager, how are you taking this and what are you doing to make sure people are safe?
Well, look, I think from an investment perspective, right now you are getting, as you mentioned, you are getting a sense of, well, the number is just going to go up. In the stock market, we're kind of in this melt-up phase where you can't really provide a reason as to why the market is moving higher, except that it just continues to move higher. And again, we've highlighted a few reasons as to why that is, that dynamic in 2024, why there are subtle differences than, say, maybe during the dot-com bubble, for example, even though the risks are extremely similar. The result is very similar, even if you have different avenues of getting there. I mean, when you think about just a handful of facts from where we are now, say, for example, we have more stocks with higher P/E ratios than the peak of 2000 of the dot-com bubble. Obviously, when you look at the household, the average household has more exposure to stocks than what we saw in 1999 and 2000. And you're seeing a very significant dispersion between, say, the S&P 500 and lower volatile companies, which, you know, goes back again to the late 1990s. So it is a development where you don't necessarily have to be concerned. It doesn't mean those facts mean the market's going down. It just means you have to take that into consideration if you're going to make and put new capital into the market. And again, I think that's what's the difficult part on the institutional investment side is you certainly have a run of people that are getting into this market because they have FOMO, the fear of missing out, and they're getting in, which is typical late stage behavior. And your job as an institutional investor is to avoid that. Do not vote. Do not vote or invest with your emotions. You need to make a reasoned judgment and go, hey, am I getting good value by putting this money in the market right now? When again, you have more stocks trading at higher forward-looking price-to-earnings ratios than the most overvalued portion of our modern history in the stock market, and that was the dot-com.
Well, you know, again, we've talked about this on other shows where, you know, this Magnificent Seven, looking at Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Amazon, Meta Platforms, Alphabet, I think it's Tesla. You know, they've all pushed the S&P 500 to all-time peaks. And, you know, part of it was fueled because of this artificial intelligence friendly. So, you know, that rally had a lot of people scrambling to try to see what they're looking forward to in 2024, you know, kind of raising the question now whether this tech thing is a boom or is actually just a bubble. You know, we've had bubbles before, the dot-com crash, for example. You know, this Magnificent Seven thing, they saw average earnings, the price, that rise 55% in the fourth quarter compared to a year ago. So I guess doing what you do, this AI craze, if it's not a modern gold rush, I guess, you know, where are we going? What would you recommend to people going into an election year as far as monies and investing, as far as being safe but still getting some kind of a gain? Is there any magic formula that you would follow?
No, I mean, there's not a magic formula because the market, the dynamics change. Again, I think that's the important part. You know, I think some of the most dangerous words that anyone can say is this time is different. But you have to recognize that each situation, again, is going to have a different set of variables if you get to the final conclusion again. And that's kind of what we just talked about a few minutes ago. Right. Look, interest rates right now, while historically are still below the norm, you saw a material rise. Actually, historically, the most significant rise in interest rates, in borrowing rates that we've seen in modern monetary policy history here in the United States. We have not seen a period where in such short period of time you went from zero bound to over five. And the markets initially reacted negatively to this, as we saw in 2022, and then they've absorbed it and then some. But we necessarily haven't seen the economy take that in the full brunt that it should. And again, there's always a lagging mechanism, the monetary policy. And I think in this situation, the lag is even further because the way that debt is constructed. Obviously, when you raise interest rates, you raise the borrowing rate, what are you doing? You're making capital more expensive. You're making debt more expensive. Well, if you lock in interest rates on a fixed income or a fixed rate debt obligation, that interest rate hike isn't going to affect you until you have to refinance it. Well, we know that over the next 36 months, really starting this summer, you're going to see a significant wave, trillions of dollars of debt that needs to get refinanced at higher rates.
Right.
So we're just entering this period. And again, so this is just yet another variable that you're having to weigh to go, hey, look, am I getting a good value investing in the stock market right now? Sure. And that's why I think, again, how are you handling as an institutional investor to your question? I think you can invest broadly. You cannot, to be clear, cannot invest broadly. I think you have to invest in individual companies within sectors that you have a high conviction on, whether you follow a variety of sectors as a macro investor or you work in a certain industry and you have a very good handle on the cyclical nature of your given sector. But I think that's the only way you're going to invest right now, or the way that gives you the greatest odds of actually generating a positive return. And look, we're just talking equities. We haven't talked anything about fixed income. And I know there's been a lot in, let's just call it, mass media talking negatively about fixed income. And it's been that way for at least the last 5 or 6 months.
Right.
But I think we're still a subset of the fixed income world that one can invest in and still get good value. I agree. investing in, say, an 8 to 10 year corporate bond right now is probably pretty poor value. But if you're able to acquire an investment grade or a high quality piece of corporate paper, a corporate bond, and say 18 to 24 months and less at, say, 6% annually, that is good value. Now, you can, it's hard to find compared to where we were 5 or 6 months ago, but you can still find pockets of it if you're patient. So if I had the opportunity to get, say, 6% per year over 18 to 24 months of, again, good quality creditworthiness from a corporate borrower, I think you're hard-pressed to find better value than just, say, broadly investing in the stock market.
Right. Well, look, you started off talking about China. People don't realize they should, that China is the second largest economy in the world next to us. And it's obviously, whatever happens in China is going to have a profound effect on us. And, you know, they had a target, I guess, of 5% growth or GDP. And a lot of American analysts now are saying they'll be lucky to get 4.5%. So I guess the question is, how do you feel about the Chinese economy and how it's actually going to affect us in America and our stock market if they, you know, have a slowdown? You know, I don't care what it is. They spend a lot of money on defense spending, for example, what have you. But how could it affect us, their economy?
Well, look, I mean, there's a lot of, you have a lot of American companies with financial interests in China. Again, we highlighted just at the open what was going on with Apple and how news out of China affected Apple negatively, and you saw them come under pressure. Really, Apple's been under pressure now for the better part of the last month, especially when you compare them to the rest of the, you know, let's just call it the Magnificent Seven, even though I think when you look at the Magnificent Seven, really, you're losing one company per month now from probably the overall heyday for all of the Magnificent Seven, which was probably 4 or 5 months ago when you started seeing weakness in Tesla, which, you know, has continued since the start of the year. But look, I think in regards to China, the idea is you have a lot of American interest over there. If you see a continued softening in the Chinese data, then I think some of that reverberates back to the United States because of the financial interest that a significant portion of the S&P 500 and especially the Dow Jones Industrial Average has. Because when you talk about, say, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you know, these are multinational conglomerates. They're going to have exposure to China. So weakness in China, one of the largest economies in the world, as you said, and one of the faster growing larger economies in the world, that's going to have a negative impact both on the top and bottom line. And that's just something that's, while it's priced in to a degree, you're seeing the market look over. And I think you just look at the market run the last couple of months, you're having the market basically look over any negative data and basically putting a positive spin on and going, oh, that's, I mean, it's not arguable. It's bad economic data or bad, say, corporate data. And in some instances, and especially in regards to Magnum 7, you know, people are just looking by it and going, oh, that's fine. We're going to go ahead and buy the market anyway.
Sure.
And they see bad news as good news because it might force the Federal Reserve's hand in what they do with monetary policy.
Well, speaking of monetary policy, Fed Chairman Powell, he's scheduled to speak tomorrow. What do you think he's going to talk about?
I think it's going to be more of what Rafael Bostic has said recently in the last 24 hours, which is it's going to be continued walking back of the dovish pivot that we had from a few months ago. Rafael Bostic, who is a voting member, gave a quote basically saying, look, he believes his first rate cut is going to be the second half of this year, which again, you're thinking about May. That basically says you're not going to see a rate cut in May. So again, the market is continuing to have to backtrack on monetary policy, and the market is doing that under the guise of, well, the economy is just going to continue to accelerate. And so that is where the decoupling is, I think, between actually looking at the economic data, looking at expectations for economic data, is you have this disconnect of, well, look, if we see the Federal Reserve walking back on rate cuts, that means the economy is going to be fine. The economy is going to continue to accelerate from here. And that justifies the historically rich, the historically expensive market multiple that's being attributed to the broader stock market right now. And that doesn't necessarily, that train of thought isn't necessarily being met with the economic and especially the leading economic data that we're seeing, which is showing higher chances of bad economic data in the future. And again, that's where there's the decoupling of thought of where the market is and where it could possibly go in the future, because there could be a situation where the economic data does start to break down and the Federal Reserve is late to rate cuts. And again, remember, Federal Reserve cuts interest rates. It doesn't have an impact for at least a few quarters. And so you could have a breakdown in the economy, which leads a breakdown in the markets. You have a Federal Reserve that makes rate cuts, but that those rate cuts aren't materially felt for another year, and you still have downside market pressure in, again, the broader markets for an extended period of time.
Right. You know, we've had people still mention Bitcoins to us. You know, where it just yesterday, I guess it hit 69,000. It dipped a little bit this morning, I guess, where it's now down to 65. And, you know, when you think of cryptocurrencies, you know, everyone now that initially bought Bitcoin now is showing a profit. And what's your take on it, just for our listeners to understand this? And if you're a new listener right now, you're listening to Stash Graham. He's the Chief Investment Officer, Managing Director of Graham Capital Wealth Management of Washington, D.C. That's grahamcapitalwealth.com. So, Stash, what's your take on that?
There's not much of a take. I it's hard to get a constructive view on an asset class that you really can't put a pulse or fingerprint on what exactly it is. When you know, you're using Bitcoin, when Bitcoin came out over a decade ago, the idea was it was going to be an alternative currency to the U.S. dollar. And then obviously we know since then that has not happened. It's not a currency. You can't buy things within, and you have countries that have basically outlawed it. So it's hard to be a currency if you can't do any one of those things. Then it was supposed to be a store of value, which we know it's not, because it requires electricity. You just can't store it under your bed. I mean, the true store of value means you could store it somewhere and at least it holds its value. Again, we know it's not that. Recently, what we've seen, especially with market permutations over the last 5 years and how that has been consistent with Bitcoin, really, it is a technology risk asset. That's really what it is. It trades on sentiment. And it really, it has a strong correlation to what you see from the tech sector. So again, I think it's hard to put a pulse on it, because if you call it a technology-based risk asset, then you go, what's the underlying value? What are the earnings potentials? What's the intellectual property behind the asset? And so that's the tough part, I think, when you try to value what is actually the core tangible value of this asset. Again, if you want to call it that. I know some people, and this was maybe a few years ago, was you need it for blockchain technology. And we know that's not real either, because blockchain technology, while it is a concept and it has been implemented, you don't need Bitcoin for blockchain technology. You've actually seen a lot of banks over the last 5 to 6 years implement their own blockchain technology without the need for Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency. So again, it's just very, very tough to be able to gauge and provide an educated opinion on something when you really can't put a pulse on what exactly it is.
Well, no, I can appreciate that. And I might add that when you look at what Bitcoin has and where it's come from, I mean, my gosh, there's so much questioning of the validity of it as an investment. And I don't care if you're talking about Jamie Dimon, Morgan Stanley. I don't care if you're talking about Warren Buffett, where basically they look at it as something that they really derided Bitcoin as something that's intrinsically worthless, and it's just mindless speculation. So I guess it is what it is. Now, BlackRock got involved and it doubled in price, but all they're doing is selling something that it's not their money that they're putting into it. So I guess the whole issue is we don't want to see anyone get hurt. And if you're going to invest in anything, stay away from cryptocurrencies. I think that, you know, you're going to be much safer. Would you agree with that, Stash?
Yeah. Again, there's not much for me to add to that. It's certainly a very, very speculative investment. And I'm going to venture and say the great majority of listeners are either approaching retirement or in retirement. And that type of asset class doesn't necessarily mix with the traditional attributes or risk tolerances or investment objectives of people that are approaching retirement or in retirement.
Right. Well, let's get this in too. What you should invest in, what's a safe haven? Let's go real quickly to gold for a second. Here you have something, we got about a minute or so left, Stash, but here gold now has risen more than 4% since Thursday. And is that something that you would have people put into their portfolio in a small capacity?
Again, it depends on the person's risk tolerance and objectives. Just similar to what we talked about yesterday, it largely depends on what the investment objectives are. If there is a negative about gold, it doesn't produce an income stream. It doesn't generate any earnings. So it is, you know, again, a traditional store value asset. I do think it's interesting, you know, when you factor in how much air Bitcoin takes from gold, that gold is actually at all-time highs.
I know.
At the face of that, it doesn't get much coverage. And that is an interesting tell, I think. Now, again, we've spent plenty of time talking about gold, and we know gold and how it acts when you actually get your real monetary policy pivot involved in a rate cut. We're right. Talking about rate cuts getting pushed out further and further. So that catalyst really unlocked that last leg, and gold is getting further and further away. And I think that's something you have to weigh if you're going to allocate new capital to gold.
Right. Well said. Stash, as always, we appreciate your sound, sage advice, and we'll be talking to you tomorrow. You take care now.
Take care, David.
That was Stash Graham, our Chief Investment Officer, Managing Director of Graham Capital Wealth Management in Washington, D.C. Look, if you feel that now's the time to get a good second opinion of what you're doing, we're going into unknown waters this year. The market's at an all-time high. Well, guess what? What goes up comes down. We have an election going on. We have wars in Israel. We have wars in Ukraine. Anything could happen at any time. Be smart. Be safe. Don't lose what you've already made. Because if you lose it, you got to remake it, and that takes time. Let us help you. Come to Graham Capital Advisors. We have offices in Tampa, Sarasota, Venice. Go to our website, schedule an appointment. It's GrahamCapitalAdvisors.com. You really want to be lucky in life? Go out and help someone. God will smile on you. You're going to get to be incredibly lucky. We're lucky to be Americans. It's right on our currency. In God we trust. Good luck. God bless. Take care of each other. Stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Graham Capital Market Update. For more information on any of today's topics, visit GrahamCapitalAdvisors.com. This program is sponsored by Graham Capital Advisors, LLC, an independent estate planning and insurance agency. Investment advisory services are provided by Graham Capital Wealth Management, LLC, an independent registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Graham Capital Wealth Management and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. The information provided is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice, and it should not be relied on as such. Individuals should consult a qualified professional for guidance before making any purchasing decisions.